Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 100 of Locked On Cubs. I'm your host, Ryan Davis. I'm here with my co-host, Sean Sears. How's it going, Sean?
I'm doing good. Stayed up late for the Cubs game last night just because it was on the West Coast and was not rewarded with a win, unfortunately.
Yeah, I also stayed up late. And by the time they had bases loaded with one out and they had the five-man infield drawn in, I was kind of just like, please just end it. Put me out of my misery. I'll trade a loss for being able to go to bed right now.
I felt about the same way, honestly. Especially, I mean, you know, when you load up the infield twice in two consecutive innings, you know things aren't going your way tonight, unfortunately.
Right. This is Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And this is our 100th episode. It's our centennial, I guess. So congratulations to everyone involved, to you, to all the other guests that I've had on. It's been an awesome 100 episode run.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't even realize it was such a momentous day. I would have prepared more.
I had the big giant lever on the side of my wall that I was going to pull with the one balloon that says 100 that falls from the ceiling, but nobody would see it anyway. So anyway, yesterday's game, Kyle Hendricks was just masterful. It was his best game of the season. 8 1/3 innings, he allowed 5 hits, one unearned run, with one walk with 8 strikeouts on 109 pitches. But offensively, the Cubs collected just 4 hits in total. The Giants were able to scratch out a run against the combination of Steve Cishek and Pedro Strop in the bottom of the 11th, and it was a 2-1 win for the Giants. So tonight's game, it's another 9:15 Central Time start. So, you know, if you have to, take a nap or something. And the pitching matchup will feature Jose Quintana against Johnny Cueto. For Cueto, it's the 7th start of the season. He came off the DL against the St. Louis Cardinals just a few days ago and allowed 5 earned runs on 10 hits and 5 innings. But overall, he has a 1.95 ERA this year. Quintana was okay his last time out. He only allowed 2 earned runs against the Detroit Tigers in 6 innings. But the problem for him this year has been the walks. He walked 3 in the game, and his walks per 9 this year is 4.2, which is by far the highest of his career. From 2012 to 2016, he had just a 2.3 walk per 9 rate. So let's talk about Quintana a little bit.
Yeah, no, Quintana itself, I mean, he's a guy, like you said, the walks are a big issue for him right now, more so than ever. It just seems like he has a tough time settling into games, and it just feels like he's grinding sometimes and really like kind of fighting against himself in moments. But when he's locating, clearly, I mean, Quintana's got a great curveball. He went to it a lot more last year than he had ever. And he's kind of reverted back to the guy we saw against when he was playing for the White Sox and using more of his fastball and trying to set up pitches for that curveball. I'm not sure exactly the right way to go for Quintana, but it feels like sometimes he doesn't trust his stuff. It's not necessarily elite, but I feel like it's good enough to where he could probably, you know, if he's throwing that fastball, maybe not 100% locating it on the corners, could still get away. But he just feels like he's too fine sometimes. And it's either like it's the most perfect pitch on the black or he just misses it. And, you know, more often than not, you're just going to miss it than hit that black line.
Yeah, it feels like with him, more than I've ever seen him in the past. And, you know, I watched him a little bit with the Sox and then obviously pretty much every start last year with the Cubs.
Right.
It feels like what you said, grinding. That's kind of the right word. He goes out there and is just fighting himself constantly, fighting to throw strikes, fighting to locate those pitches exactly where he wants them. Mm-hmm. There are very few, like, you know, Q goes out there and has a nice, you know, 12 to 15 pitch inning. It's usually 20 plus pitches, most innings going out there. Just, you know, even if he doesn't allow runs in the inning, there's somebody gets on, maybe he walks somebody, maybe there's a hit, maybe, you know, he's got seven, eight pitch at bat. It's just not clean so far, even though he's had, you know, by most measures, a half decent season. It's, you know, by his own measures, it's not very good, but, you know, you don't look at his numbers and think, wow, this guy's been awful. But for him, just to the eye test, it's been pretty bad most of the time.
Yeah, I think the weird thing too is I noticed this last year a little bit, and it's kind of continued a little bit as well into this year, is Quintana's just like strikeout numbers have spiked since he came to Chicago, and even a little bit before last year, before he got traded, he just seemed to be striking out more and more. Last year, he ended between the White Sox and Cubs collectively close to a 10 K per nine. He's at 9.87. This year, he's at 8.25. That's still the second best of his career outside of last year. He seems to be striking out a lot of guys, but then, you know, last year his FIP at least kind of justified the 4.5 ERA. He had a 3.68 FIP. This year he's at a close to the same for ERA, but his FIP is near 5. He's not getting those pitches that are really, you know, at least when he was kind of like struggling or he couldn't locate or whatnot, he could lean on getting those ground balls and leaning on his infield to kind of get those outs for him. And it's not, we're not really seeing that. His ground ball rate roughly about the same, but it just seems like guys are kind of hitting him and hitting him hard. Even still, his home run fly ball rate is, you know, it's increased quite a bit from last year. It just seems like Quintana, when his stuff is on, he can deal. We've seen it in two games now against the Brewers where he just shuts them down. But then, you know, there's games where, like we saw a couple weeks ago, where he just, it's not like necessarily like he's lost. He knows what he's doing. It just seems like he's not doing what he wants to be doing. And I'm sure that's just got to be the most frustrating thing as a pitcher.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up two stats that I think are interesting versus his career numbers. We know that the things that have gone up the last 2 years, especially home runs and strikeouts, really spiking. So I don't feel like you know, his home runs per nine is just under one for his career, and this year it's 1.4. Yeah. Last year it was 1.1. So I mean, I don't feel like that's a big surprise considering home runs are up for everybody, and his strikeouts being up a little bit. That's, you know, part of the ebbs and flows of the game. So right. I feel like those are normal. The one thing that really stands out is the difference between the walks. And, you know, if you look at his walks plus hits by innings pitch, his whip, it's 1.407. So that's like way above his career. It's way higher than last year when, you know, he had what a lot of people would consider somewhat of a down year overall for him. Right. Even last year, his whip was pretty much in line with his career numbers. And this year, it's just, you know, it's much higher than, you know, anything since basically his rookie season. So right. I think like when you break it all down, it comes down to pretty much that one thing is just locating the pitches and keeping guys from walking. And I feel like there's, you know, everyone has those games where they walk like maybe one or zero, and those are great games. And I think he had maybe a couple starts early where he did that, but I don't have his game log up in front of me, but I don't think he's walked less than two in a game in months.
In his last five starts, at least he's had at least two walks or more. I'm looking at his yearly stats right now. I mean, you look at last year, he set a career high in walks at 61 between the Sox and Cubs. He's already at 43 right now, and he's not even halfway close to the innings pitched he threw last year. So, I mean, right now, I mean, if things were going the way they were, he's on pace to set a career high in walks by close to 20. So clearly there's something going on. And like you said, too, with just the way the game has been, I mean, more batters strike out, but more batters have power. You know, the difference can be just a couple more walks. And suddenly you're going from a pretty okay pitcher to a guy that's struggling. And that's kind of what we're seeing with Quintana right now.
All right, I don't want to talk too much about this. We've got some Kyle Hendricks talk we want to do. Let's go ahead.
Things to talk about.
Yeah, let's go to our second segment. So Hendricks last night was, and I used this word in a tweet, and then I saw other people using the same word in a tweet, and then I heard Len Casper refer to him this way on the broadcast, but it was vintage Kyle Hendricks. I think that's the best way to describe his start last night. Even more so than at any point last year, except for maybe in the postseason against Strasburg, I think Kyle Hendricks looked like 2016 second half Kyle Hendricks last night. What did you see from him?
Yeah, he looked like a guy that we expected to be, you know, he looked like 2016 Kyle Hendricks, a guy that was a serious Cy Young candidate. His changeup was fantastic last night. I think I saw somewhere that he whiffed close to 16. I think that's with his changeup last night. I mean, that's incredible. When his changeup's going and being that type of pitch, it makes everything else so much better. when he can set it up like he was a little bit today with yesterday with his cutter and even some of his times his fastball, his changeup just looks deadly because it just comes out there and flutters and drops, and it can be such a devastating pitch. And it's just something I don't think we saw necessarily a lot of so far this year. But I mean, he looked like a dominating guy, a guy that, you know, you expect to be one of your best pitchers coming to the postseason. And if Kyle can seem to capture that and push that throughout the rest of the season, the Cubs should be okay, especially with the way John Lester's pitching. You know, there are question marks throughout this rotation that I don't think anyone really saw it being this much of an issue, but Kyle Hendricks pitching like that is got to be some of the best news you can have for the Cubs.
Right. Yeah. I mean, injuries are an issue and Chatwood is an issue, but you worry about things, those things, I think. But with Hendricks, it's kind of like, you know, he hasn't performed all that well up until this point. You know, the mechanics are off and he knows that and he's working to fix it. But you're kind of just like, I know Hendricks will get this figured out. Somebody posted, and I don't have him in front of me either, but his first half splits career versus his second half, he's much better in the second half for his career. And I think that's because, you know, the last few years he's had a little bit of something that he had to fix. Last year he had that point issue where he was releasing too high and he wasn't getting the velocity on his fastball, and he had to work through that. And then in the second half, gradually that fastball velocity came back, and then he dominated right into the postseason. And this year it's just this, whatever it was mechanically that he had to figure out, it looks like he figured it out. I guess the main thing for him will be, what does he look like in his next start? Does it revert, or does he continue being able to locate? Because, you know, when he locates like that, it seems like over the last 2 years, we haven't had both things paired. We haven't had Hendricks locating his pitches like he can, and we have paired with him being able to hit 80, 89 on the fastball. Like, what it seems like when he's locating, he was at like 85 with his fastball, but now he's like all over the place at 89. Yesterday it was 88, 89 with the fastball and like pinpoint precision with the curve and the change.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, it just seems like he has, if it's one thing, it's not another thing. We haven't seen a complete Kyle Hendricks yet for a little while here. Looking at his season split so far, of course, April, May, he was great. ERA roughly just above 3. Of course, he had this really bad June. His ERA blew into 7.03. Had 19 earned runs, 15 walks, batting average close to 270 against, 382 on base percentage. So teams were hitting him. And now in July, with, you know, only a couple starts so far, his ERA is down to 2.03. He has only walked 2 batters so far, only 3 earned runs throughout those starts. He's looking like the guy that's really, and we're seeing it now, a massive overcorrection from where he was just last month. And like you said, Kyle Hendricks is a smart guy, and he knows his game is about adjustments and making the changes necessary to be successful. And Kyle seems to be one of the more successful ones in doing that midseason, consistently finding ways to fix what he's doing or finding a better way to approach the game or just be different. And I think having that mindset is what makes him so good.
It is, and he's so intelligent, and he understands what his problem is. You know, I think a lot of these pitchers, when they have these struggles, they don't know how to fix it because they don't understand their own mechanics as well as they probably should, or as well as maybe not as probably should, but maybe like as well as a guy like Hendricks does. And sure, he really knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows. He even said to me at one point last year, like, he doesn't necessarily watch film on what he does. I mean, it's really just interesting the way he goes about it. It's all feel for him. And at this point, it seems like he's got it right. And going forward, if this is figured out for him, and then with how well John Lester has pitched, and I made the case a little bit that there's probably some regression headed towards Lester's way.
Right.
But with those two at the top of your rotation, I feel like if Quintana can even be what he has been, which has been just kind of mediocre, and Montgomery can be good enough, that's a good enough top four that I'd feel good about going into the postseason.
Yeah, I would feel the same way. I think especially when you talk about the experience between at least Lester, Hendricks, and even to an extent, you know, Mike Montgomery, those three are at least are a little bit battle tested. Quintana showed last year in that I think he pitched in game 5 of the NLDS that he can, you know, stand up to the spotlight and the limelight of postseason. So, I mean, I honestly am very – I'm still very confident in this pitching staff, even though we've seen some pretty disappointing results so far. We still got plenty of time to fine tune it, get it figured out, get healthy, like you mentioned earlier. But yeah, I think it's tough to beat Leicester and Hendricks at the top of any rotation right now.
All right. Last thing I wanted to talk about in the second segment before we move on to our around the NL Central segment. Chris Bryant, the talk about him has been that he might return in the San Francisco series. That meant either today or tomorrow. Looks like it's not going to be today. He's batting second and DHing for the Smokies today. But of course, that's a noon start. So, hey, maybe they fly him to San Francisco.
Get him a doubleheader.
Get him two or three at bats. Get him out of the game by 2 p.m. Central Time and get him to San Francisco by like 7 o'clock. I guess it's possible, but I don't know if they'd rush him like that.
Yeah, I don't know if a jet lag Chris Bryant is much help to be honest. But, you know, who knows? I mean, he is a former MVP, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the way they've gone about the whole thing with Bryant has been weird.
Yes.
I mean, they pretty much lied about his injury from the start, which is, you know, not something that this version of the Cubs has done, really, at least that we know, the lying about injuries. And now they've got him doing a rehab stint in double A so that he can return presumably with three or four games left before the All-Star break and then take another break. It just seems like an odd way to do it.
Yeah, you would think just at this point, especially with the Cubs having like only two more series before the All-Star break, just to let Chris sit, you know, like just give him these couple 4 days, 5 days off and let him enjoy a long break before he comes back and hopefully fresh and refreshed for, you know, basically another second half of the season. But you know, maybe they want to get Chris from at bats. Maybe they think he can be an All-Star. Who knows? but
he was
yeah.
having a good season, but
he no. was, yeah. But yeah, no, just it just seems kind of like a weird layout to it. And the Cubs of all teams seem like one of the smarter teams at utilizing disabled list trips to tie in perfectly with where they want, you know, guys to line up, particularly with their pitchers. They've done it a couple times this year so far, but it just seems weird. It doesn't. It's not like it's oh my God, what are they doing? It's just kind of like, what's going on?
Well, yeah, and you know? It's frustrating when you figure out that they've been lying to you, especially when a lot of the things are like right in front of your face and they're telling you that they're not. Like when the power suddenly just fell off the plate and he was still doing okay, he was still drawing his walk. So obviously the batting eye wasn't a problem. You know, he wasn't necessarily swinging way out of the zone all the time, but the power was just gone. And so people started theorizing, might there be something wrong with Chris Bryant? And the Cubs, no, nothing's wrong with Chris Bryant. And then eventually it's like, well, now he needs to sit for a day or two because he has the shoulder fatigue thing. And then later it's, well, now he needs to go on the DL because it's an injury. And then later, well, it's been an injury for a while. And it's like, well, obviously.
Yeah.
Clearly he didn't, you know, after a month of not being able to hit for power, he didn't just today get the shoulder fatigue problem. So it's just, the whole thing has been weird, and it's too reminiscent for me of 2004, which I might be, that might be a little too far back for you as a Cubs fan, but you're on the younger side. But 2004, man, and 2005, those teams, if there's any team that's ever lied about injuries just constantly,
right?
They constantly lied about injuries and hid stuff from you. And it was not like it was that hard to figure out, like, okay, Mark Pryor is hurt, obviously.
Yeah, Nomar Garciaparra, any pitcher on the roster for like the 2 year period. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's just, I hope the Cubs aren't headed that way with their star players when they're injured, because I don't see any reason to have lied about this with Bryant. And the same thing for the concussion issue earlier in the year when it was like, no, he definitely does not have a concussion, but they were putting him through concussion protocol.
It just seems like they were trying to, like, it's like you would think, like, the Cubs would think there'd be, like, mass hysteria if Chris Bryant, like, openly said he had to go on the DL for some injury. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I could see, like, a small market, like, you know, the Brewers or something like that losing their top player for a little while and worrying about, like, you know, just marketing aspects of the game, I guess. But, I mean, when you're a team like the Cubs and every starter has a legitimate chance of being an all-star at some point in their career, it just seems weird. And if that's what, like, we're worried about, clearly the priorities are not correct in this front office. And that's never been the case. So it's just kind of like a weird kind of one-off situation we're seeing here.
Yeah, it's just it bothers me. I just want to know why.
Right.
But I guess we'll probably
know. Yeah, unfortunately.
All right. Well, let's wrap on that, and we can talk about what happened with the NL Central in just a second. Yesterday, the Brewers also lost to the Miami Marlins 4-3. That was also in 10 innings. Winning run scored on a Brian Holiday single. So the Cubs at least keep pace with the Brewers. The Cardinals were off, so they gained a half game on everybody. The Pirates beat the Nationals 6-3, and the Reds topped the Cleveland Indians on the road 7-5. So NL Central standings are the Brewers maintaining their 1.5 game lead at 54-37. Cubs are now 51-37 after losing to the Giants. The Cardinals get that half game, but they remain 46-43, and they're about to do a road series with the Chicago White Sox. And Pirates are 42-48 at 11.5 back, while the Reds are 14 games back at 40-51. So any final thoughts on what's going on with these teams in the division today and where they are heading towards the All-Star break?
Honestly, for the most part, I think the majority of the teams are where we thought we'd be. I thought St. Louis might be a little more competitive, but from what we've seen out of some of their better players, particularly Dexter Fowler right now and even Matt Carpenter before he kind of turned it around, they're struggling, and until up in this lineup, they're probably going to continue to struggle. The Cubs and Brewers are right at each other's throats here, it seems like, and that's about how I would expect it to be. I think after this All-Star break, we're going to see the Cubs finally get healthy and put together this team that has seemingly hit in parts but never collectively, or their pitching has had two or three good arms, but the rest of the rotation has kind of been meh. I think we'll kind of hopefully see these guys kind of fire on all cylinders, especially as they push towards the postseason. And it becomes more of a like, all right, here's the finish line. Let's go and, charge through it type of feeling. So, but beyond that, I mean, the Pirates and Reds, they can do whatever the heck they want to do at this point, I guess.
Yeah, and the weird thing for the Cubs is I feel like there's been a lot of angst about this team this year, and they've had a lot of aspects in which they've underperformed. Obviously, they've gotten practically nothing from Anthony Rizzo, practically nothing from Yu Darvish. But at 51-37, I think they're only one or maybe two games off the pace that they were at in 2016 when they won the World Series. Yeah. So, the difference in feeling, and I know they had that really bad stretch heading into the All-Star break that season, yeah. But the difference in tone between the two teams, when one of them won 103 games in the World Series and the other one, we don't know what's going to happen yet. I guess it's just all about, the fact that the Brewers are in first place and the fact that the Cubs had pretty much buried everyone in 2016.
But yeah, that's really what it was. I mean, yeah, clearly the Brewers being in first place probably bothers some Cubs fans. But yeah, I mean, we just saw that the 2016 team got in such a crazy hot start. They just they banked like 20 plus wins to the half of baseball. Like, it was crazy to see a team do so well so quickly. But I think people are realizing now that baseball is never, ever usually like that. And that was kind of a one-off type of thing. So hopefully people aren't expecting the Cubs to mash their way through baseball and win 110 plus games or whatever it may be.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap there. This has been episode 100 of Locked On Cubs. Thank you for joining me. That's my co-host, Sean Sears. I'm Ryan Davis. And hopefully we'll be talking about staying up late to watch a victory tonight.
Fingers crossed. Let's make 101 a winner.